So Thursday, there's going to be a vote in the House of Representatives to raise the minimum wage, and it's about damn time. It's been over a decade since the minimum wage has gone up in this country, and it's one of those things where, as someone who believes in, as Ronald Reagan said, you know, while he was president, the best anti-poverty program is a job. I know a lot of people who have two and three jobs, and they're still in poverty. I would like to amend Reagan's statement and say, you know, the best anti-poverty program is not just a job, but a good-paying union job with decent wages, decent health care, some retirement at the end of a long career of work. But we seem to be moving far, far away from that. There's a group doing a lot of really good work on talking about economic issues and creating that economy that built the most prosperous working class and yet still an opportunity for the very wealthy to do very well. The patriotic millionaires do some really great work in here to give me some thoughts on why the minimum wage is an issue that they're focused on. I've asked Charles Simmons to come talk with us. He's a member of the group, the Patriotic Millionaires. Charles, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So let me ask you, why is this an issue? Why is this an issue for millionaires? Why should you care?
Because we care a lot more about the country than many other billionaires. So we're an organization of about 200 people. And if you want me to go through a little bit of it, spread around the U.S. in about 30 or 40 states. And we do all believe in the fact that we should be doing a lot more as, let's say, rich people. But I don't think we have any billionaires in our group. Like, I would not qualify for Trump's cabinet. but we consider ourselves to be rich. We're in the highest tax brackets, and we want to see those tax brackets increase. We failed, obviously, on the last try. So anyway, it's about really, really concerned about the lack of equity, the inequality in the country right now. That's really scary for all of us. The issue that brought us together, everyone I've talked to, first of all, we hate the name Patriotic Millionaires, but we're stuck with it. And two is that the reason we came in is it's taxing us that we're for. And that's a pretty unique statement in this country, is to say we should be paying more taxes. And that means, of course, everybody at all wealth level and higher should be paying more taxes.
Now, I often say we should go back to the good socialist president Dwight Eisenhower's tax code. Now, I know there are some people who are going to push back on that, but everyone paid more. And it was this idea that the bigger your shoulders, the more water you carry. It goes back to the days, the caveman. You didn't have the scrawniest guy bringing the water back to the cave.
Yeah, if you gave all of us a 10% higher tax, and I'm in California, which has a very high state tax, too. But if you increase my tax by 10%, it would not change my lifestyle one bit, and that's true for all of us in the organization. And to say that we can't do that to help people who are, you know, much more disadvantaged than us is just unpatriotic in our opinion.
Yeah,
and that's why the term patriotic is in there.
Yeah, I love the name Patriotic Millionaires. I love reclaiming patriotism and talking about how we move the country forward and what's best for the country as a whole instead of just hooray for me and the hell with everybody else.
Yeah, the word that's in there, that millionaire, doesn't mean much anymore. I mean, if you own a house in California, you're probably worth $1 million. So we're worth more than that in general.
Yeah, well, and look, it's important, I think, to have people like you speak out and say, look, we're willing to, as long as we get the things that we need. You know, I look at our infrastructure. Our infrastructure is crumbling. I look at the fact that, you know, our education system's struggling. You go down the list of things that we should be investing in, but that we're not, because we've had this for the last 40 years, this tax cut fetish and this assault on workers, which is why, you know, for the second time in the history of the minimum wage, you've had an administration that didn't increase it during the Obama years.
Yeah, no, we're totally agreement. So we're in sync. And the $15 minimum wage has been a major tenet of ours on a national level. I personally haven't been that much involved in that because California already committed to $15 an hour. But in fact, $15 an hour does not cut it. I live in Silicon Valley, and you cannot possibly get by and support a family on $15 an hour.
Right.
So we support here. We're trying to raise the tax more on a local basis. But there are areas in the country where $15 will make a big difference. And we also believe that we need universal health care of some sort. Obamacare was a step toward that. That's being dismantled by the Republicans. And so in general, to get Medicare involved, I mean, I'm Medicare. I'm 70 years old, and it works really well. And so we can't extend that to more Americans so they can get health care, and you don't go broke just because you got sick. You know, that's disgusting to us.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, it's kind of, and I'm sure there are people out there who are going, wow, this is a guy who won the game. You're on the winning side of the game. And, you know, you're financially secure. You probably don't need Medicare. But yet here you're a guy advocating that, you know, everybody should have opportunity. Everybody should have at least bare minimums. And then the question comes, why? I mean, I remember the Ray Dalio interview on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you saw that or not. But he was talking about income inequality being, you know, if he were president, declaring it a national emergency, it is that big of a deal to him.
Yeah, I think that's true for everybody in the organization. It's nice for me to meet people from New York or Tennessee or wherever and immediately know we're going to agree on these things, that we're, you know, in the same boat. And, you know, one thing I think I realized, I wasn't born with wealth, but I got a great education. My parents really forced it. My dad was a car salesman. And yet he sacrificed so I could get in good public schools and came out to California with engineering degrees and did really well. But I realized how much of that is just plain luck. And most people who are successful don't admit that. They simply think they did it all themselves. And clearly some people like Bill Gates was brilliant, but I think he's one of the first to tell you that, yeah, he was in the right place at the right time. And so anyway, we're trying to, you know, equalize the country more, because that really scares me about how unequal we've become and how much the other rich people have taken over the country.
Yeah. I mean, you look at our politics and how much it's almost, I argue that politics is the new polo, the sport of the wealthy right now, because sadly too many of us feel like our voices aren't being heard. And if you look at legislation that goes through and actually gets signed, very little of it actually helps average everyday working people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the tax cut for, you know, Trump is selected to help the working class, which is just absurd. He gave enormous tax breaks for the very wealthy. And we just say we didn't need that. We'd like to give it back. And you mentioned the Eisenhower tax break, somewhere falling to like 70% max bracket. And in general, we don't have any specific policy on as an organization, but we all support it. It's a matter of where you put that. Because back in those days, $200,000 is a big income. Today it has to be in the millions before you got to that bracket. But I see no reason why somebody making, some of the billionaires are making $100 million a year. Why can't they pay another $30 million? What are they going to lose out of it?
No, it's an excellent point. And, you know, during the Eisenhower years, the top marginal tax rate was actually 92%. Nobody paid that, however. There were tons of loopholes, and I'm a big fan of loopholes. We incentivize certain behavior, like investing in libraries and schools and hospitals, all in favor of it, because ultimately it comes down to what society needs, investing in the commons, because too much of what used to be in the hands of we the people has now been privatized.
Yeah, no, that's correct. And most of that has failed. I mean, I think our medical system is the primary one. I mean, I'm in favor of capitalism. Believe me, I've done really well.
Sure.
But we've got to figure out where capitalism doesn't work. And one place is the medical system, where we have all these independent profit centers, and nobody's trying to control the costs. It's just not motivated to. And capitalism doesn't work there. Or at least it has to be modified and controlled very carefully. And has not been done that calculation.
No, I'm still trying to figure out how capitalism works. So when I'm lying on the ground having a heart attack, am I speed dialing three different hospitals to see which one will take my coupon? Probably not. I'm probably going to want to get the closest one possible.
Well, how about when they roll you in there and say, "What insurance do you have?" And you say, "I don't have any." I said, "Well, you go over to this side. We'll save you maybe, but that's it. And by the way, we'll send you a $100,000 bill that you can't pay."
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem. And I want to get back to the minimum wage. On Thursday, that's going to be the big vote. I expect it to pass the House. I'm sure you do too. I don't see it getting anywhere in the Senate. It'll die there. And even if it doesn't, there's no way I believe Trump will sign it. But, you know, some of the arguments against increasing the minimum wage is it's going to harm small businesses. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, that's certainly not true around here, because our costs are so high, you have to do it. And, you know, if you have foreign competition, you can say that. But if all of your competitors, let's say in a restaurant business, and every restaurant has to pay a minimum of $15 an hour, and the rate can increase it from, let's say, 10 or 12, then they're all in the same boat. And it may be that people go out to dinner less because it costs more. I don't know. But if you're making the workers have to work, like you said, two or three jobs, I think it's worth it to do it. And past experiences when we raised the minimum wage, it has not had that impact.
Right.
History has shown that it has not had that catastrophe that people sound. But, you know, people want to, bosses want to pay as little as they can in many cases.
Sure. I mean, that's capitalism. You know, labor is a negative on the balance sheet, and you want to minimize that. Now, the Congressional Budget Office came out with their research on this, and they say that it's going to probably cost 1.3 million people their jobs. I don't know that I necessarily agree with their methodology and how they came to it, but this plays right into the anti-minimum wage folks' talking points, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, how much that can trust and how they did the analysis. I'm an engineer by training, and I want to see how people come up with numbers like that. And I haven't seen that. But, you know, if there's any time to try it, it's a time when our official unemployment is at record low levels.
Right.
And we'd be able to absorb it more. And in terms of many organizations or companies are running out of people. I mean, they need even immigrants. They need, you know, better trained people. And to say they can't pay anymore for it, there's something not working in our system when they just don't raise their offers to get the people they need.
Yeah, because I remember when I was in college, I mean, one of the things that the economics professor, you know, was very clear on was supply and demand. And how on the big X curve, you know, things moved along the axis. And, you know, as labor markets tighten, wages have to go up. And as there's an oversupply, wages go down. And yet I'm always seeing the wages going down when you have a surplus. But I haven't seen it this time around that it's actually moved to higher wages. And I know some people say, well, last year was 2% increase. But that's after, you know, 40 years of stagnant and declining wages. You would think, maybe just a thought, it would push along a little bit further, right?
Yeah, something's broken, and the model isn't as simple as you and I learned in school.
Right.
Clearly, because it should be, you know, wages going way up, people offering more money to get those employees they need, but they're constrained on the other end on whatever, and they decide not to do it. The biggest threat to some of this is actually going to be automation. I'm responsible. Silicon Valley is going to be responsible for a lot of that, but it's scary going forward. If we don't fix it now to make sure that everybody has access to education and healthcare and the basics of life. It's going to get worse as we, you know, bring self-driving cars out, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm so right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Charlie Simmons. He's a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. You can check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out so that you can follow that. You know, the automation front is, you know, to me something that's, since you brought it up, you know, really troubling, because there, other than Andrew Yang, there's nobody talking about it. I don't see any type of legislation on how we're going to adjust to the massive job losses, the tsunami of job losses are coming. And as someone who spent the majority of my life in the trucking industry, you're looking at, you know, a couple million jobs that could be in the next 15 years just gone. And what do you do with those people, the policy-wise? We're nowhere near talking about what to do with those folks.
That's correct. We're all dealing, well, that's because one of the reasons is we have a president who's focused on himself and is incapable of looking forward in the future because he doesn't care what happens after he leaves office. So we have to get, and I agree with Andrew Yang in saying stuff. You know, I don't think as an organization we haven't discussed the minimum, guaranteed minimum income. And, you know, to me, the scary thing is to see some 19-year-old men out there with not having to work. What do they do with their time? So I need to think we need to find jobs for them, get them trained for the right job in the future is critical to that, too. But we're certainly, I mean, that our organization says we need to fund those things, fund the training programs, maybe fund a guaranteed minimum wage, whatever. And we're the people that should be funding it. Yeah, we can afford it.
I've always been a fan, instead of a guaranteed minimum income, which, you know, I somewhat support, or even, you know, Milton Friedman's negative tax, since this is where all this is born out of, is a guaranteed jobs program where, you know, the federal government, if the private sector can't or won't create enough jobs, the public sector absolutely has to.
Yeah, I personally agree with this. I'm speaking for myself now,
sure.
Not necessarily Patriotic Millionaires, but yeah. And there's so many things around, you see, we could do better infrastructure stuff in the country. Our roads in California are the richest state in the union, and the area I live in is one of the richest, and yet our roads are crap. And, you know, we get these things done, we got to prepare, and, you know, and just so many things could be done, and they would be public jobs, and we ought to just, you know, we rich people should pay the taxes and do it. And then, meanwhile, we'd have to be looking at plans for the future with people maybe smarter than I am, because it's very complex issues. But and other countries are trying the minimum wage. But whatever it takes, is, you know, guarantee them a job, I think, is a great goal.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and in your lifetime, did you ever imagine we'd be in this kind of a scenario where you were back to where things were back during the robber baron era, where you had, a handful, a sizable handful of extraordinarily wealthy people, and then, everybody else? I mean, Matt Bruning did a piece not too long ago that showed since the late 80s, I believe it was, the top 1% has taken like $21 trillion in wealth, while the bottom 50% lost almost $1 trillion in wealth. Just a massive redistribution, and is just troubling on so many levels, but eye-opening on another.
Yeah, I'm, being part of that 1% is almost embarrassing to me. I mean, I certainly take the money, and I pay it in taxes, and I also give... My personal passion is underprivileged education, so I spend a lot of time and money, and I tutor a local high school.
Good for you.
To get into that, because I'm trying to do my little share. But my amount of wealth won't do anything around the whole country. It won't. It can help a few kids here locally, but we need all of the rich people to pay the tax. And many of them, maybe most, are just plain greedy and say, no, I want it myself. I earned it myself. I worked hard for this money. And that's, I don't know, can I say bullshit on your program?
No, you just did.
Okay. but it is. I mean, it's just, they're just plain greedy, in my opinion. So
the question is, how do we move back to that? And I think starting with the minimum wage increase, that would be a good start. Talking about a more progressive, higher tax rate would be another one, where everyone pays a little bit more, but also gets a little bit more back. I think that's the way to go. And I think the work that you guys do with Patriotic Millionaires is so important to get people out there saying, it's great that we have very wealthy people, but it doesn't have to be this way. So I think it's really important.
That's great. Well, we're trying.
Good stuff, Charlie. I appreciate the time, man.
Okay. Thank you.
Good stuff, Charlie Simmons. Again, you check out the Patriotic Millionaires website. And as I've said, we've had them on in the past, and it's always amazing to me that you've got people who won the game. They've won. They're the winners in the capitalism game, who are saying, there's something wrong with this system. There's something wrong with what's going on. And as he pointed out, they don't have any billionaires. That's where even the 1% is separated. You've got the rarefied air of the 1% of the 1%, who really are the ones who are driving a lot of this bad policy, who are really the ones who are doing this. So look, tomorrow I think is going to be an interesting day. We'll see where the Democrats fall on raising the minimum wage and just how fast Mitch McConnell declares it dead in the Senate. But it's still a fight you have to take on. It's still a fight you have to continue every single day to pursue. And, you stop and think about it. And I forgot to ask Charlie about this concept of tax cuts creating jobs. Because at some point, this is another one of those myths, along with the minimum wage, there's massive job losses. Another one of these myths that we have to put to bed and rather quickly. Just my thoughts. I'd love to hear yours, though. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Should we raise the minimum wage? Is it a good idea? Will this help return reward to work? Or should we do what some conservatives want to do and say, no, don't raise the minimum wage. We'll just give you more welfare while we demonize you for getting that welfare. I'm curious. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in Labor History.